Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. A USU Brain Health Fair will be hosted at the Sorensen Center on Utah State University campus on June 13th. A highlight of the event will be a panel discussion led by Dr. Beth Fouth, director of the USU Alzheimer's Disease and Dementia Research Center, and Dr. Landon Watts, gerontologist with Intermountain Healthcare. Their discussion is entitled Memory Matters, How to Spot the Signs and Where to Find Support. And today on the program, we're going to be talking with Drs. Fouth and Watts. We'll learn how to combat cognitive decline, reduce your risk of Alzheimer's disease, promote healthy aging, and improve your overall brain health. As we said, we'll be previewing the fair itself. So both of our guests today are leading experts on aging and cognition. Dr. Watts supports older adults in northern Utah and southeastern Idaho by treating frailty, gait disorders, falls, polypharmacy, malnutrition, and more. Dr. Leonard Watts, thanks for joining us for the program.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Let me ask you to just follow up. I got this bio. Polypharmacy, what's that?
Great question. If you break it down, it's poly means many, and pharmacy typically refers to pharmaceuticals or medicines or drugs. And so it's a common thing we see in older adults that there are many who end up on a lot of medications. And so I work with older adults to try to figure out if all those medications are really necessary, look at drug interactions, and especially in the context of the Brain Health Fair, I think about how these medications may be having a potentially detrimental role on cognition and memory, and a few of them which may have a positive role.
So as a gerontologist, I guess, supporting, keeping aging adults as healthy as possible, I guess these are some of the problems, the frailty, gait disorders, falls, malnutrition, along with the brain disorders.
Yeah, definitely. Most of us physicians, especially in primary care, will treat these conditions. But in my training as a geriatrician, a big part of what I do is focus specifically on some of these syndromes that you've highlighted, Tom. And they seem to have a very large, impactful role on people's quality of life as they age. And so definitely something that, for me, I'm acutely aware of and really try to help folks with.
One more thing, I'm just curious, so why did you choose this? You could have, go to med school, you choose any specialty, why gerontology?
That's a great question. It's funny that you asked that. When I started my career in medicine and medical school, I can remember my now wife that I was dating at the time, she said, you should become a geriatrician. And I kind of laughed and said, I don't know much about what that is. And I think that to be honest, a lot of people don't, but it's a fantastic career. And as I learned more about it in medical school and then in residency, I had a great mentor who was my program director in internal medicine residency named Scotty Church, and she's a geriatrician. And her kind of practical approach to medicine and looking at the bigger picture of people's lifespan and what matters to them at the end of life, or maybe not the very end of life, but just in that latter half of life, she showed me that there's a lot of things in medicine that we could probably improve. And I was really charmed by that and have just been loving geriatric medicine ever since.
Well, as we go along, I'll probably be asking you, I myself am heading into these years. So the personal stake in this, I'll be getting tips on, how we can stay healthy in our later years. So we welcome in as well Dr. Beth Fouth, who is a professor in the Department of Human Development and Family Studies, also director of the USU Alzheimer's Disease and Dementia Research Center. She researches stress related to dementia caregiving and ways to support quality of life for persons living with dementia, also assesses caregiver interventions. What would you add to that, Dr. Fouth?
Well, I just would add that I think we're really lucky to have geriatric medicine up here in Cache Valley. And I think for a long time, maybe we didn't have that specialty as present here. But for anybody that's had children and understands the importance of taking a child to a pediatric physician, and the same can be said for older adults, and that there's some complexities that come up at the later years that I think a geriatric physician is much more equipped to think about collectively and holistically, and again, including things like quality of life. So we are absolutely thrilled to have Dr. Watts with us. I think there's going to be a lot of people that will benefit from his expertise and also, excuse me, also his knowledge at the health fair.
Well, here's some statistics, kind of alarming in a way. 10% of Utahns aged 65 years or older have Alzheimer's disease or related dementia. So that's the people who suffer dementia, 10%. And an estimated 112,000 Utahns provide informal care for a loved one with dementia at home. Many do so without training, guidance, or support. So, Dr. Fouth, I guess that's something you're trying to address with the Brain Health Fair?
Yeah, we know there's a lot of people that are caring for somebody with memory loss, and it could be somebody caring for a spouse, could be somebody caring for a parent, or maybe even people that anticipate that it could happen someday. So we think, you know, just like with everything else, if, you know, what pops up in life, to have some preparation, some education, and some support is going to make a situation probably a little easier for folks. So one thing I hear a lot from the public is, you know, I wish there was something we could do for caregivers. And that's a good prompt, because the answer is we have a lot that we can do to help caregivers. We have a lot of resources and trainings. And we've done some pretty rigorous science on these trainings to see if they help, and they do help. So we're using science to say, you know, the caregiver had this level of stress or this level of depressive symptoms before they started the program. They complete the program, and then their depressive symptoms have improved, their stress levels have improved, and then qualitatively or through interviews, they say, this was really helpful, I'm so glad I knew this. So, you know, not every program is going to be a great fit for every caregiver, but we're hoping that by directing caregivers to the many different types of caregiver supports that we have available, that somebody will find something that will help them even just a little bit. So that's our goal, is to really get information out to the public about all the resources that we do already have.
So this is often, Dr. Fouth, you know, sudden. I guess your spouse maybe acquires dementia, progresses, and all of a sudden you're a caregiver with no training.
Yeah, it can happen. It can happen sort of in two ways. One is that everything seems to be going really well, and then there's some kind of medical event that happens quickly. There's a fall. There's some kind of brain event, like a small stroke, or something happens where people's lives get turned around pretty quickly, and a person goes from needing very little care to needing quite a bit of care, potentially overnight. And then the other really common way is that people don't even think of themselves as caregivers. They're married to somebody, and they've always helped, you know, take care of that person in a way. They've always, you know, helped feed them and helped drive them, and so. So that transition into caregiving can be a little more ambiguous, where people aren't always sure if they even are a caregiver. They just know that their spouse is experiencing some symptoms and needs a little bit more support every day. So in both situations, the stress levels can actually be quite high. In the first one, obviously, the stress comes on quickly and everybody has to adapt very fast. In the second way, when people are just transitioning more slowly, it can also be a bit confusing, because you think, well, yesterday they were fine, so what's going on today? Why today are they asking me questions over and over again? Or they seem to be confused about somebody that they've known our whole lives. And so those can also bring a degree of stress or sort of confusion for people, because there is no distinct line that the person, you know, all of a sudden needs to have a caregiver. So I think people navigate these two situations differently, but we do know that in both types of situations, support can help people through, you know, understanding what's going on and getting resources for both their loved one and for themselves.
Dr. Watts, I want to get your perspective on this. I'm sure you deal with caregivers all the time. You come in and you diagnose someone, and suddenly or gradually a spouse is thrown into this role. What do you say to folks to reassure them?
It's a good question. You know, it's interesting. Some people, I think, they have maybe done a little bit of research themselves, done a little bit of reading. And as caregivers, when they come in, they're not terribly surprised that their loved one has a diagnosis of dementia. But there's also the other side of that, which is that some people come in and for whatever reason may not know a lot about recognizing the signs of cognitive decline, and they may be pretty surprised or even in denial for their loved one. And those conversations can be really challenging, but also really rewarding. And I think that I found it's really helpful to create an alliance with patients and their loved ones, their caregivers, often spouses or children who come in with them to show that, kind of like Dr. Fouth mentioned, there is a lot we can do to help these individuals. And I think a lot of it starts with education and knowledge, kind of understanding what dementia is as a syndrome or maybe as a disease and what we can do to help, because there's a lot of neat research, like research that Dr. Fouth is doing, that is showing that there are many things we can do to help folks. And, you know, one of my goals is to have folks not walk out of the office feeling like I told them that there was nothing we could do for dementia, because I don't think that's true. But I think sometimes that message may get incorrectly conveyed to folks, especially when they walk out of physicians' offices. I've had multiple patients or family members comment to me on that. And I don't think that's something that was necessarily intended in other offices, but I think it just sometimes happens because we talk about, you know, what is a cure for dementia, quote unquote. And even that term can be defined in a number of ways. But ultimately, I think as individuals see that there are a lot of things we can do and we provide that education, the conversations go better and folks feel a lot more empowered and hopeful for the future.
I want to follow up on that immediately, Dr. Watts. What can be done? I think a lot of times we think you get a diagnosis of dementia and it's all over. That's hopeful. What can be done?
Great question. Well, I'll just use an example. Had a gentleman who came in and his family was worried about that he might be showing signs of early dementia. He was having a lot of forgetfulness, a lot of difficulties thinking through things. And so, you know, we talked on the first visit and I started going through his medicines and we did some testing that suggested that he probably had cognitive impairment. But looking at his medications, I quickly identified a medication that was going to be worsening his cognition. And I said, you know, why don't we just see if we can get you off this medicine? And sometimes that's not a quick process. Sometimes it's a slow process, but we did that over a period of months and was very excited to have him come back and say, you know, I still have some memory issues, but I'm thinking a lot more clearly. I can remember things better. And I, you know, and his family said the same thing. And so, you know, in my profession, as a geriatrician working specifically in the realm of gerontology as a geriatrician in medicine, one of the biggest things I, of course, focus on is trying to find out if there are medications or health conditions that are negatively impacting someone's cognition. And there's a lot we can do in that realm alone. And that's just apart from the whole educational realm and caregiving realm. So there's that's just one example of many.
Dr. Fouth, I want to direct that to you as well. You know, from the point of view of caregivers or the person themselves who's received a diagnosis of dementia, what hope can you provide with things that can be done?
There's you know, I think some things that we think about sort of what might we need to learn about now and what might we need to think about for the future. So if somebody has a dementia diagnosis, as long as they, you know, have gone in, you know, haven't waited far too long to get the diagnosis, there is actually a really good window of time where we can do a lot of conversations with families and think about, you know, what do you want your quality of life to look like? You know, if you do have to move into some kind of memory care facility, do you want to take a look around and see what they look like and have a preference? Do you want to take a vacation? Do you want to take that big trip to Hawaii that you've been thinking about for a long time and putting off? So in people in early stages of dementia, they're often still able to participate really well with support. And so we say, let's go do some things together and make some plans together. so that the caregiver doesn't feel like they have to sort of manage everything after things, after communication becomes more difficult. So in that window, I think, again, there's lots of things we can do in terms of preparation and education. And I think when people feel like they have a network available to support them, they often can do better. So what happens with many caregivers is that they don't create a network. They think, like, I can handle this, I'm doing great. And they are, they're doing wonderful. And then things start to get more difficult and a little bit more difficult. And they haven't started setting up, you know, who can come in and watch my loved one so I can go out to lunch or go for a long walk. Or they think, you know, I don't really want to ask my kids because they're so busy and I don't want to ask them to come in and take times out of their busy lives. But in reality, most people want to help. And in fact, some people say, is there anything I could do for you? And most caregivers say, no, we're fine. But if we think about that differently and we say, what about a structure we can set up of, you know, friends and family, neighbors who are really willing to come in and help and they want to. And maybe you're not asking them to come in for, you know, 5 hours a week. Maybe you're asking for 1 hour every other week. For some caregivers, it might be something like, I can handle everything with my loved one, but I'm really having a hard time with mowing my lawn. It's just something I could never get to. I've never enjoyed it. I mean, that's a task that many people would say, sure, let me help you mow your lawn. So I think we like to think about helping caregivers set up a network of people that they can call on, kind of a phone a friend situation. You know, who could you call when you're having a rough day? And who could you call that could help, you know, come sit with your loved one? Who could help you drive someplace if you're not able to drive for whatever reason? So just having those available when needed, maybe they're never needed. I just think that those kinds of things can help caregivers feel a little more supported. And then we also think a lot about the caregiver's well-being and how they manage stress. We know that dementia, not for everybody, but for some can bring up some pretty significant behavioral symptoms the caregivers are not trained at, you know, managing or even working with. And so, you know, let's talk about where those behavior symptoms are coming from. When somebody is asking the same question over and over again, which is common, you know, they'll say something like, you know, when's breakfast? And the caregiver says, we just had breakfast. And they say that 15 times in a row, and everyone starts to get a little testy and frustrated with each other. And, you know, it's like, how can you not remember we had breakfast? But that's the disease process at work. And it's not somebody trying to be annoying or trying to be difficult. And there's some techniques that we can teach caregivers, actually, on how to handle when somebody with dementia is sort of stuck in a repetitive kind of, they're confused about something and they keep asking questions over and over. So we try to work with caregivers on some skills on redirecting or changing the scene, you know, trying to mix things up, put on some music, start dancing, doing some things where they sort of can stop that cycle and help everybody sort of move on from the breakfast experience. Or frankly, maybe just offer the person a banana or something else. Maybe they're still hungry, right? So we like to just let people know that the situations that they find themselves in with dementia can be changing, and they may not have the skill set already, but there are skills that we can definitely build to help them work with a person with dementia more comfortably and also manage their own reactions to when things get tough. You know, there's really good therapeutic techniques that people can do in difficult situations that help de-escalate and help them feel like they can manage the situation even when it's tough.
Let's take a break. Much more to talk about. I want to get in. We've been talking about caregivers. We want to talk about diagnosis, what you can do, and talk about prevention as well. Brain health, how to promote a healthy brain. We're previewing a USU's Brain Health Fair. It will be hosted at the Sorensen Center at Utah State University on June 13th. That's a Saturday, 10 to 4, I believe, is when this is happening. And my guests today, Dr. Beth Fouth and Dr. Landon Watts, will be presenting a panel discussion titled Memory Matters, How to Spot Signs and Where to Find Support. And that'll be happening twice during the fair, at 11 and 2, I think, the two times. So just go to the fair. It's at the Sorensen Center on the USU campus on Saturday, June 13th. We'll have much more in this discussion about brain health following this brief break. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. There's a Brain Health Fair, USU's Brain Health Fair. They're hoping this is the first of many. It's the inaugural USU Brain Health Fair. It's hosted at the Sorensen Center at Utah State University on June 13th, 10 to 4 there at the center. This is presented by the Emma Eccles-Jones College of Education and Human Services at USU. In collaboration with Intermountain Health, USU's Alzheimer's Disease and Dementia Research Center, and the Sorensen Legacy Center for Foundation Center for Clinical Excellence. They'll bring in community partners, USU experts on psychology, aging, nursing, neuroscience, balance, hearing, and more. And included in the fair, they'll be talking about the Prevent Alzheimer's for Life study, or PALS study. You can get involved in that study. And an exhibit as well, Faces of Alzheimer's. A lot happening there, and it's free and open to the public. We have with us Dr. Beth Fouth, who is director of the USU Alzheimer's Disease and Dementia Research Center, and Dr. Landon Watts, gerontologist with Intermountain Healthcare. They'll be presenting a discussion, panel discussion, titled Memory Matters, How to Spot the Signs and Where to Find Support. During the fair. That's where I want to go next. How to spot signs, where to find support. I'll start with you on this, Dr. Fouth. You're quoted in a press release here as saying, many people are aware of how to take care of their heart and their muscles as they age, but fewer people have knowledge and resources for maintaining their brain health. And so the fair wants to help people understand where to go when they suspect memory changes might be occurring. I guess that's, we tend to take care of our body more than our mind. Maybe the mind is mysterious. I don't know what what's going on there. I'll start with you and then go to Dr. Watts, who I assured talks a lot about this with his patients. I guess, first of all, if you suspect that you have some memory changes, what should you do?
Well, I think Dr. Watts would be a great resource for this as well. But honestly, we really try to encourage everybody to not ignore cognitive symptoms. It's sort of like if you have nagging pain in your body, usually there's a reason for that pain. And so let's not ignore it and wait till it gets to be something bigger and more difficult. So things like cognitive symptoms, I think sometimes people think, well, if we start tracking these things, maybe that means things are going really poorly for me. But I like to think of it kind of like taking your blood pressure. So we take your blood pressure all the time. You take your blood pressure when you're healthy. You walk in and, you know, doctor's appointments that have nothing to do with your heart health, and they take your blood pressure. And really what they're doing is just checking in and seeing how things are doing. Sometimes it's a little high. Sometimes they're giving you feedback on what the risks are with the blood pressure you have. And I really think of sort of cognitive screening and cognitive health as being similar. We may not need to start tracking our cognitive health through screeners, you know, at the age of 20 or 40, but over the age of 65, it's not a bad idea to start using the cognitive screener that's available to people during their primary care visits. So Medicare, if they're on a Medicare insurance plan, Medicare will cover an annual cognitive screening. And I think some people, again, they sort of say, well, I don't need that. Well, maybe you don't. Maybe your brain is great, but we would like to see if there's changes and track them. So that's the first thing is if you're over 65 and feeling great, or if you're any age is starting to notice some cognitive symptoms, it's always a good idea to go in and try to see what might be causing those. Is it something that's preventable? Is it medication? Is it another organ system in the body that's sort of not functioning well and it's leading to cognitive changes? So we just want to sort of encourage people to say, track these things as they come and go, so that you have a pretty good understanding. If things start to get worse, you know a little bit more about your history. So you could say, hey, I've had a cognitive screen for the last 8 years. Absolutely no symptom, no issues have ever come up. I've never had a score that's been something to worry about. All of a sudden, you've got a score that is something to worry about. Then we know that there's probably a change happening. I think have Dr. Watts respond too, because this is a lot of what he does in his practice, and I think in more than just sort of advice, I think probably he has a little bit more experience with this. So, Dr. Watts, I'd love for you to take over as the expert.
Sure. Thanks, Dr. Fouth. I completely agree with what you said. And one thing I'll say too that comes to my mind is that Sometimes we have individuals come in and they're not here to see me for cognitive evaluations. They're seeing me for some other geriatric syndromes or general health. And then we start talking about memory, and I might sometimes see a family member and oftentimes patients say, "Oh, well, I maybe forget something here or there, but it's not a big deal." One of the best things I heard in my geriatric fellowship training down in Salt Lake was, be curious as a clinician. Be curious about when people say things, maybe sometimes dig a little deeper and ask more. And so I often will do that and say, "Well, tell me more about that." And sometimes it turns out that as we go through that process of describing what's been going on with memory, I'm pretty convinced it's normal aging. And because we know that as we age, our memories don't perform at the same level that they do when we're in our 30s and 40s, for example. But sometimes parsing that out can be very challenging to say, is this actually normal aging? And what does normal mean? And or is this actually maybe more of a, what we call a neurodegenerative disease like dementia? And so we do have some objective tools in our toolbox to help us figure that out. And if I kind of converse with folks and find that I think, that in my gut that something might be off, or like Dr. Fouth mentioned in the Medicare annual wellness visit, we have a very simple tool called the Mini Cog, which is a screening tool. It's out of 5 points. And the intent behind that is once a year to be checking in with folks and say, well, if your score is not 5 out of 5, we should at least talk about memory. But sometimes it can be nuanced, and that's where someone like myself with some extra training can come in. And so we'll often administer an exam like the Montreal Cognitive Assessment, or MoCA. There's another one out of St. Louis, Missouri called the SLUMS. And these are not full neuropsychological tests, but they do a good job in general. Especially the Montreal Cognitive Assessment has been validated in multiple studies to show that it does a good job, for the most part, helping define or diagnose what we call cognitive impairment. And really, that's the first step to say, is there something objectively going on with someone's brain health in terms of memory and cognition? And so my staff are certified to do that. And I know at Utah State, we have several individuals who are also certified to administer that. And then we have a certain, it's out of 30 points, and we do a certain interpretation of that. And that will help us say, is there cognitive impairment objectively? And sometimes that's very, very helpful for family and patients, because sometimes what looked like maybe it was normal aging, the test starts coming back positive, and we start having more conversations and finding or uncovering that, yeah, there's more going on than maybe met the eye. And so that's really a key first step to the whole process of diagnosis.
So, Dr. Watson, I want to follow up here. Before they get to you, before a person gets to your office, what tips would you give a family, maybe, or person trying to do that parsing out, right? Is this just a senior moment? Is this just regular aging? Or do I have a cognitive problem that I need to go get diagnosed?
That's a great question. Everybody's different, so everybody will manifest a little bit differently. But in general, there are some things that can be similar. And one of them was mentioned earlier. The example that Dr. Fouth gave about breakfast is a really good one. If you have a loved one that asks you the same question multiple times, or iterations of the same question within a couple hours, it doesn't mean necessarily that there's something going on. It could be they're really stressed and having a hard time paying attention, right? We all do that from time to time. But, if a question's getting repeated more than twice, 3, 4, 5 times, and it's happening in the same day, it should at least, spark that thought. Why is this question being asked so much, And it doesn't mean that we should get confrontational about it, but it should at least, if you have a loved one going through something like that, cause you to stop and ask, why might that be going on? Another classic example is if you have a loved one who's pretty organized by habit, and now we're finding that they're more disorganized, having a harder time remembering dates to important appointments and things that your loved one would normally never forget in the past, that's kind of a sign, or at least something to say, maybe there's something going on here. And another common one I see is sometimes our ability to use technology or to do tasks that are a little more complex starts to deteriorate. So I don't use it for someone who's never used a computer in their life before, but if someone, you know, had a background in a job where they used a computer quite a bit, and now we're having a hard time using the computer for more basic things, it doesn't necessarily mean something's going on, but it makes you wonder, especially if the computer hasn't changed, right? If the device hasn't changed. So there's some technology things or, different types of activities. Like I think I had someone who was, he did automobile repair, you know, mechanic work all his life. And then his daughter told me that he was having a really hard time doing some basic mechanics on his car and getting frustrated. Those are common examples of how you might walk through and say, maybe there's something going on here.
Dr. Powell, anything you want to add to this piece?
Yeah, I'll also remind people that, you know, when you walk out of a store and you can't find your car, moments like that are really common across the lifespan. So I know a lot of people say, you know, it's a senior moment or, oh my gosh, this is the beginning of the end. And in your 20s, you probably also walked out of a store and couldn't remember exactly where you parked your car. So some of those things that, you know, if they've happened before, they happen when you're young, like we want to be really forgiving of ourselves of those moments and just say, you know, you were distracted walking into the store. Or you go to that store so often and you usually park in the same spot, but there wasn't any spots there that day. So you went in a different spot and now you're just confused. So moments like that are, you know, again, we want to kind of laugh and say, let's not take these too seriously, man. I can't believe I just had to look for my car for 5 minutes. It's the things where if it's something really familiar, like you're driving home from work and you always take the same route home from work, but then all of a sudden you realize one day you're kind of confused about how to get home. That would be something I would say, okay, that's unusual. This is something you've done regularly, you're comfortable with it, and it's not an unfamiliar place, but all of a sudden it feels unfamiliar, like really unfamiliar. Also, I would say sort of the forgive yourself moment when you're trying to talk to a friend or even a neighbor and you're like, I don't see this person that often and I can't remember their name. That's okay. Like we have that all the time where we're like, I wish I could remember their name, but I can't. That's really different from, you know, maybe talking to somebody in your family, like your children or your siblings and having a hard time remembering their name. So there's a degree of, again, where we want to cut ourselves some slack and just say we're busy people, we're distracted people, and we're not always paying attention to where we park the car. But we don't want to assume that when things start getting sort of more bigger or more complicated in terms of misremembering things, those are the things where we'd say, just let's go get it checked out. I mean, hopefully it's nothing and hopefully it's just you weren't feeling well that day. But again, like I said, more information is going to help us know what happens over the long term and whether this is a trend or a pattern, or this was just, you know, a strange day where you just weren't, things weren't functioning as well as you'd like.
Let's take another break. We'll come back with a final segment with Drs. Fouth and Watts. We're previewing the USU Brain Health Fair. That's happening on June 13th, 10 to 4 at the Sorensen Center on the USU campus. It's being presented by the Emma Eccles Jones College of Education and Human Services at USU, along with some partners. And we'll have more following this break. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're previewing the USU Brain Health Fair. This is hoped to be the inaugural fair, the first of many annual. It'll be hosted at the Sorensen Center at Utah State University on June 13th. That's a Saturday, begins at 10, ends at 4. And as a part of that Brain Health Fair, there will be a panel discussion led by Dr. Beth Fouth, director of the USU Alzheimer's Disease and Dementia Research Center, and Dr. Landon Watts, gerontologist with Intermountain Healthcare. The topic of their discussion, Memory Matters, How to Spot Signs and Where to Find Support. We've got Drs. Fouth and Watts on the program today for another 10 minutes or so. In this segment, I want to talk about prevention. How can we prevent Alzheimer's or other dementias? How can we promote overall brain health? And perhaps, if you do have an onset of a dementia, how can you slow it down? How can you combat that? I guess I'll start with Dr. Watts on this. I guess under that general heading, prevention, combating dementias. Can we, I guess, what does the research show? Can you really head off dementia with a certain lifestyle?
Great question. I think this is a topic that is very actively being investigated all the time. And I think the short answer is there are a lot of things we can do that reduce our risk of dementia. There may be some risk factors for dementia that we don't have a lot of control over. But there are many things we can do. So I think this is something where I don't know that we have a full answer yet. And because dementia is really, I consider it kind of like an umbrella term or more of a syndrome. You know, there are different kinds of dementia, and some of these types of dementia may be more or less preventable by what we call modifiable lifestyle factors than others. You know, a classic example would be vascular dementia. Vascular dementia is, you know, a condition where the blood vessels in our brain, they either build up plaque or they experience actual strokes in different places, which is a blockage in those blood vessels. And that, in my mind as a clinician, as a physician, is a type of disease that we have a lot of medicines for. We have a lot of lifestyle things we can do that help reduce our risk. And so I would say for that particular kind of dementia, I think there's a lot that we have to offer in medicine, and also just that an individual can do to help try to really reduce their risk, maybe even, dare I say, prevent the development of vascular dementia. And what's interesting is that most of the dementias do seem to share a vascular component, and that's pretty key as we, as investigators, as clinicians, as we all work together to try to further understand how to prevent these diseases, is that most of them have some kind of mediated pathways that have to do with our blood vessels and our blood vessel health. And so doing things like exercise, there's studies that show that about 150 minutes of exercise a week, which may sound daunting for many at first, that's about a half an hour, five times a week of moderate intensity aerobic exercise, that does reduce people's risk of most dementias across the board. And so that's it's not necessarily something that most people are able to get up and do immediately, but I always encourage my patients to really sincerely think about it and say, maybe I can't do a half an hour 5 days a week, but maybe I can do 10 minutes a few days a week, and just start there and build up. And that's a great way to help reduce risk. Another one is diet. We have the MIND diet, M-I-N-D, that's being researched, and it's not too dissimilar from the Mediterranean diet. I think a lot of the diets in medicine and health that we're finding, they share a lot of similarities, the ones that really work the best. And, you know, there's theories about if the antioxidants of natural antioxidants of fruits and vegetables seem to be one of the driving roles for what helps our health. And that's probably true of our vascular health as well. So those are just a couple examples, and I'd be happy to also give Dr. Fouth a chance, because I know she has done a lot in this area as well.
Yeah, Dr. Fouth, what would you say about prevention?
Yeah, absolutely. Those are probably two of the biggest, I think, that Dr. Watts mentioned. There has been a lot of research worldwide, including a really big study sponsored by the Alzheimer's Association here in the United States. It's called the POINTER Study. And so the one thing I'll say is that there is a lot of really good science that we can reduce our risk for dementia. I mean, we all know that there's some people who take wonderful care of their health and they get dementia anyway. So we know we don't have 100% control over the prevention of all kinds of diseases that can cause a dementia. But if we think about our brain, our brains need a lot of blood. So a lot of blood flow to the brain that helps oxygenate the cells and sort of bring nutrients to the brain cells, clears out some of the waste from the brain. And any time, let's say you have some kind of underlying disease, like a Alzheimer's disease, so you have some amyloid plaques that are building up in the brain and some tau tangles in the cells. And so just we know there's some damage happening to the brain. We know that the data would support that if we have a really sort of healthy blood flow to the brain, we're going to see the impact of that disease damage take a lot longer to show up and sort of cause problems for people. So we know that some people will have some of these sort of underlying disease processes happening in their brain anyway, but with a really healthy brain and really good vascular blood flow, the symptoms will start a little bit later and maybe not progress quite so rapidly. And so we sort of say, again, taking care of your heart can be one of the best things you can do for your brain, because even if things are happening in the brain, you're going to give yourself the best chance possible of not seeing any clinical implications of that damage if you've got sort of really healthy blood flow. So in addition to sort of your diet and exercise, which of course have a really important impact on your brain and your heart, there's also some things about keeping your brain active. We call it cognitively stimulating activities. And the idea behind that is if you have your neurons in your brain cells are all sort of pretty well connected with one another. You've used your brain a lot. You've sort of built up this this pretty big connection between your brain cells just through using them, basically. That if there's a little spot of damage from whatever it may be, you have kind of a workaround or a detour that your brain cells can use to get around that site of damage. So we know cognitively stimulating activities can help. Again, maybe if somebody has some kind of underlying disease process, it might keep them healthier or sort of not showing symptoms a little bit longer. And then things like sleep. There's an interesting things about the sort of the restorative properties of sleep. I know sleep is something sometimes people really struggle with as an older adult. So we don't want to cause stress about the sleep. But if you can prioritize sleep, and you know, maybe not scroll on your phone before you're trying to fall asleep, or not drink caffeine right before you fall asleep. I mean, there's some things that we do have some control over that also can help protect your brain. So there is a study that's going to be done at the Brain Health Fair. It's conducted by Dr. Joanne Shantz. She's a clinical neuropsychologist professor at USU, and it's called the Prevent Alzheimer's for Life study. And so Dr. Shantz and her team are really going to be having people join the study as participants and learn a little bit more about these comprehensive, like a little bit more details about some of the prevention behaviors. And all of the prevention behaviors that Dr. Shantz has in her study are grounded in science and robust scientific studies. So it's not sort of saying, well, you know, this one food item might help based on one study. That's not really what they're getting at. It's really the broader categories of sleep, social activities, hearing prevention is something we want to prevent hearing loss, or if there is hearing loss, we want to get people with hearing aids pretty quickly. We've learned a lot about the importance of brain stimulation, right? Cognitively stimulating activities. If people are having a really hard time hearing, they're actually just getting less brain stimulation. So we're going to, you know, at the health fair, we'll talk a little bit about audiology and hearing aids and the importance of having hearing aids to keep people socially engaged and have their brain stimulated by all the sounds that they hear throughout the day. So yeah, we'll have some booths available, as well as a research study for people to join if they're interested. And you don't have to join the research study. That's very optional. We still will have a lot of information about lifestyle factors that prevent Alzheimer's disease and related dementias at the health fair, even for those that don't join the research study.
Well, we're just about at the end of our time. I just want to give each of you about 30 seconds to just mention a couple of resources for people. Dr. Watts, what would you suggest? Persons, I guess, worried about memory decline or Alzheimer's or maybe caregiving, what a couple of resources?
I want to mention that for caregivers who might be really going through a lot of difficult times, there are definitely caregiver support workshops that are available through Utah State, the ADRC, and other organizations as well that I often refer my patients to. And another neat program that's coming out is called the GUIDE program, G-U-I-D-E. And it is a neat program in which there's essentially like a stipend or some subsidization of funds that help folks, caregivers who maybe need respite or need some help with caregiving in their home so they can get a break, maybe just also help themselves a little bit when they really need that. And so I'd say those are two really big resources I'm often talking to patients about. And then, of course, you know, if someone has concerns that in a cognitive about cognitive decline, I'm always happy myself to hopefully be a resource and try to help people navigate and work through the diagnostics of that.
All right. Thank you. Dr. Fauci, very briefly, a couple of resources.
Yeah, I think for people that can attend the fair, we'd love to see you. If you can't, we have a lot of resources available on our website for the Alzheimer's Disease and Dementia Research Center, or ADRC. We have a clinic for caregivers. If all of this feels a little overwhelming and you got a lot of information, you're not sure where to start, we have a free clinic where people can come at any stage of caregiving, and we can help direct them to the resources that they need. So people don't feel like they need to get everything out of this hour. Just think about this as a start, and then you can come back to our clinic, to the health fair, and to some of the other supportive services that Dr. Watts mentioned. And think of this as a journey. We'll give you information along the way as needed, just to make things a little bit more easier to manage as you're on a caregiving journey.
Well, thank you very much. The USU Brain Health Fair will be hosted at the Sorensen Center at Utah State University on June 13th. You can find out all about that at brainhealthfair.usu.edu, brainhealthfair.usu.edu. We've been talking with Dr. Beth Fouth, director of the USU Alzheimer's Disease and Dementia Research Center. Dr. Fouth, thank you so much.
You're welcome, Tom. This is a great way to spend the morning. I appreciate it.
Thank you. And we've been talking with Dr. Landon Watts, a gerontologist with Intermountain Healthcare. Dr. Watts, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate it. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you. And thanks, everyone, for listening to Access Utah.